Welcome to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion. Criterion is a global leader in assessment solutions, providing software for test development and delivery, as well as test development services for low to high stakes certification programs.
Dr. Froop, welcome to the Criterion podcast.
Hello, Arwaz. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And as always, we have our Chief Revenue Officer here, Buzz Walker.
It's good to be with you all today.
So the topic of today's discussion is around the future of the workforce and AI. Dr. Farouk leads as the chairman of the California Workforce Development Board and gets to see, you know, what's happening with the future. And a big question on everyone's mind is what's going to happen to everyone's jobs with AI?
One, I just want to thank you again, Arbaz, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be with all of you. So, you know, regarding artificial intelligence, I think there's a number of ways to look at this issue. I think one big picture thing I just want to put out there is it's not purely just a matter of replacing entire occupations and jobs themselves. Major component of this path towards automation is going to be related to automating specific tasks. So within jobs, within occupations, if certain tasks will be able to be alleviated, that will change the way that those current jobs are able to, whether it's from a capacity standpoint, productivity perspective, or a shift in the way that they work, those things are definitely going to happen definitively. Obviously, there are going to be entire occupations that do get automated different points in the future. That's going to happen too. But I think it's not something that's a definitive thing and something that's just going to happen, you know, in totality, the way that some people, I think, are, you know, framing it. So I think the important thing is we need to view workforce as an ongoing continuous education where people are able to continually get retrained skills so that they can be on the pulse of wherever technology and industry is taking, and employers, government need to invest in that, because it's in all of our interests to value that and to get on the front end of it. And so that way, again, we can make sure to preserve the dignity of workers and so forth.
Buzz, I know you've been in this space for a pretty long time and you've seen these trends and, you know, seeing all those different shifts in technology. What are sort of your thoughts and how people should be training? How do you even train, begin that transition to some new technology like that? I'm sure you've seen, you know, being with many other companies, software companies come in and probably revolutionize the way jobs function.
It is. And if you take it from a broader perspective and look at what's happening globally, there's about 1 billion learners coming out of formal education, whether that's technology degree, high school education here, university, that really aren't going to be ready for the workforce as technologies are changing and growing. So they need to immediately upskill and reskill. And that's not a problem just in California or in the United States. It's a global challenge that all economies are facing and being able to look at that. And as we look at the pace of software and being able to do it, it helps us all live our lives better, do our jobs better, but at the same time needs to come with that accompanying training and certification process that you know that the person has the skills to be able to do the jobs. So in addition to formal education and understanding how to read and write and participate in society, there's also tools, much like in the days before, if you were to be a mechanic or a plumber or an electrician, you'd go in, you'd have an apprenticeship, you'd learn how to do that job, and you had to learn all the nuances and how those things changed over time. The only thing that we're doing is changing the pace, and we're working maybe more with software and keyboards rather than physical things, but those same type of training programs and mentorships need to be put in place. And as Dr. Farouk had said, it's responsibility of companies as well as the education system and governments to help facilitate those things happening.
At a governmental level, Dr. Farouk, what steps is the state of California doing to sort of upskill this new workforce?
Absolutely, Arwaz. So it's a huge commitment for Governor Gavin Newsom and our state workforce system in general. So at the state level, we have discretionary funds from the federal workforce money. All of it 100% goes towards only what we call the high road vision, and that's under for the governor. The high road vision, which is predicated on job quality, really, climate transition and climate dimension to it is another variable, and then equity, making sure that people who communities who otherwise have not been able to benefit economically, even generationally, in areas that we're being very intentional about investing and empowering those communities as well. So our state is actually exclusively putting our funds under those kinds of programs. And so you can go on our website, California Workforce Development Board website, and see where we outline by region, by sectors. So it's all in partnership with industry. We often partner with labor unions as well across many different industries, healthcare, manufacturing, construction. So a lot of different areas. And again, all of those investments you can see on our website. But we also, our traditional system, which is really more at the local level, typically through county board of supervisors that are being governed. We have over 200 America Job Centers in California. So that local level, it's a very responsive system, and it varies per region in terms of what priorities different communities, you know, emphasize in terms of their local economic development and local workforce investments. The state does have overall, we evaluate, you know, the performance of these things to certify the local workforce boards. But generally, the federal workforce system is set up to have a lot of local input and local control.
Buzz, being in the sort of the training space, what are your sort of thoughts on being able to adapt and provide training with emerging technologies at such a rapid pace?
As we look at the different more formal processes that people went through, they go through, say, a long training program and then take a test at the end. What we're seeing more and more is what's called micro-credentials, or breaking it into smaller bite-sized chunks where you can actually learn a piece, a function, a part of that. And then as you start stacking those up, that leads to a broader certification. So now people can be doing their current jobs, have aspiration for something else, and be able to take it in more bite-sized chunks in order to be able to get to that certification where they can upskill, reskill, find a higher paying job, get a promotion where they currently are. There's a variety of different ways you can do that, but the trend is towards how can I turn this into more bite-sized chunks rather than having to go through a whole formal program.
I would just add also that for the governor, huge emphasis is on apprenticeships, because the earn and learn model has been proven as a very effective way of addressing, again, these generational cycles of poverty. We know, you know, I grew up in poverty myself, but we know in general, when people have to choose between work experience that puts food on the table or internships or, you know, work-based experiences that might have more aspirational qualities, but mean sacrificing that income, people from low-income families are going to always choose, you know, putting food on the table. So the apprenticeship model is really effective. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we need to think across many different sectors. I know a lot of times people think of apprenticeships, they think purely in the construction realm, but we're really advancing a lot of apprenticeships throughout many different sectors.
Just to maybe ask the question following up on that, are there way that industries, we have a lot of corporations that are going to watch this, maybe some startup companies, some midsize, some larger companies that may be interested in apprenticeship programs, or even some of the partnerships that you do with the industries. Are there ways for them to be able to find that information, to participate, to learn more?
Yeah, on the state, the Division of Apprenticeship Standards can be a resource, but I would really recommend, because we have 45 local boards, and as I mentioned before, over 200 local America Job Centers, that's a better way to connect, just to get a broader menu of options of what programs, resources the workforce system has. And it might point you to a state registered apprenticeship program that already exists, or connecting employers with support to establish their own state registered apprenticeships. But the job centers, we like to think of them as one-stop shops. So we want to make this as, you know, convenient for people as possible. And so they can, you can Google America job centers, type in your address and find the closest one to you. So that way it's more personable and more accessible to wherever the employer is based out of.
I know we talked a little bit about apprenticeships and construction. What about the tech industry? You know, being in California, tech is huge. You know, what's sort of the approach to being able to upskill people into these new sort of tech skills that are very rapidly shifting?
Well, one area that our state has been investing a lot is in cybersecurity. In fact, in the Inland Empire, I think it was through Cal State San Bernardino, our state invested in a workforce training program on that. I think another area with the tech, it's more of a long game, but I think it's important, is with our K-12 system, is getting more young people, more kiddos proficient with coding. With STEM jobs in high demand, there's a lot of equity issues there. This is an area where, to build that pipeline, we need to engage people as young as possible. And I know in our Riverside School District, coding is happening, you know, with all of our students, even in elementary school. So I think, you know, there's a number of ways there. And then again, in the more conventional sense, tech employers are always welcome to connect with our job centers on just like regular hiring needs in a more general sense. But I think some of those strategic moves, whether it's with cybersecurity training, coding training, and other things, can create a better overall system, workforce system, for that industry to thrive in. Because I know that there's a lot of shortfalls in terms of being able to get the skilled and trained people that they need for their jobs.
For the people out there that are thinking about some of the top skills to learn in tech, what would you say are some of the big in-demand skills in the state of California that, you know, if people are thinking about a career in tech, for example, which routes should they take?
Well, I just think the more fundamental level, I just think that the coding and being proficient, because obviously that it can encompass a number of different expertise. And so I just think overall, if anecdotally, there's a huge need and demand for that. And I mentioned cybersecurity earlier, because again, the feedback we get is that that's an area that, from a workforce training, we can really invest and get a strong ROI on. I'm sure there's a lot more broader than that, but those are the two things that come to mind.
Would love to hear some of your thoughts on that, Buzz.
The areas that I look at are even advice as you start looking towards some of either the schools or the areas or the regions, is what some of the kids are interested in. And if you look at how the tech companies employ, let's say one of the large ones in the Bay Area would be Salesforce, salesforce.com. And that's globally used, widely used, and companies need people to be able to administer that. But if you look at that, they provide free services through their Trailhead backend, which is actually a learning management system. So if you pick some companies, you pick some areas that you're interested in, you can start getting learning management resources that are available, and they'll take you on a journey as you learn. They have credentials that they provide, some badges that can lead to larger certifications. But with that certification now, you can go find a job as an administrator. Maybe at the end of the day, you'd rather be coding or doing something in the beginning, but you really can get in and get your hands really dirty in technology and being able to help in developing skills for a particular company. And now you make that services available, and there's a wide range of employers then that need that skill set to be able to administer that system. Well, that's an example of a large company. I'm sure the same is for Google and for Apple. They have their training programs. But now you also start looking at, well, there's some newer companies. And as newer companies develop these training programs and certifications, those skills in artificial intelligence, if you want to be involved in the autonomous driving area, and that's an area of interest for you, you can look for companies in that area, look at their training programs, and many of them do have online training programs or skill sets that you can now gain, get a certification at the end, and now you are, that is something, that certification is something you could take to an employer, or even finding some entry-level jobs that bring you into the tech field. And this is available pretty easily if you start looking at some websites, looking at areas you're interested in, and then under the training or learning area, typically on a website, you'll find some tools. Now, some of them may be behind a paywall, but I think people would be very surprised at how much of the learning and entry-level positions are available to help train and are done free of charge.
Dr. Fruk, I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, what are some of the thoughts around how to get companies prepared for AI? Are there any thoughts on, you know, getting, you know, you have a whole state that is now, you know, AI has sort of emerged drastically over the last 3 months and all these tools are coming out. You know, what are some of the conversations that you're hearing from, you know, from statewide officials and people on the ground that are trying to understand how to actually begin to navigate this AI space and begin to use those tools and retrain their teams?
Well, I think from the state perspective, I think there's a number of ways that immediately come to mind, because obviously it's a fast moving thing. It's obviously, just as many innovations happen in society, it moves faster than public policy is able to respond to, just in general. That's a common refrain in business and, you know, innovation and so forth. So I think this is no exception to that. I think the things that immediately come to mind are, one, who are the people that are going to be most vulnerable in being able to be not fully prepared for the impacts of this, which industries? And so I think part of it is just surgically identifying that and going through that process, not just, like I said, occupations, but different regional dynamics, where some regions will be more insulated from these changes or communities than others. And so building that resiliency, I think, will be important. And again, being very targeted with that. So overall, that's kind of a process that's happening. The other side to it is obviously on the opportunity side, that there are going to be instances where it's not purely, you know, seen as a dystopian threat, but an area where overall potential productivity, quality of life can improve, which might be able to demand higher wages for workforce if they're retrained and skilled properly, and create new types of jobs too. And so how we can support that, how we can be aware of that. The key is having that open line of communication with the tech industry itself and people who are driving these innovations, having those stakeholder input, but again, being mindful of the fact that there's many vulnerable populations that we have to be very thoughtful and proactively identify where those concerns are going to be, because obviously they're not going to naturally rise to the forefront of all of our attention if we don't do that.
That's an interesting point, you know, and, you know, training vulnerable populations. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts, Buzz. You know, you've launched training programs in India to, you know, all these different parts of the world where the training programs have really impacted people on the ground. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, how would you even go about this whole process?
There are large companies that we work with and around the globe that I know that are very interested in building the workforce of the future. And again, looking at numbers at a global scale, the number of workers that are going to be needed in these industries far exceed the available people that are trained and skilled by vast numbers. You're talking about hundreds of thousands to millions that need to be trained and upskilled. And so it is very real that training programs need to be made available. And the challenge is always in two areas. One is making sure you have the content available in the language form at the ability level that they're at right now to be able to build it up. And then also accessibility. And some of the places you look at, if you have to go to a training center, what does that really mean for someone? If you can do it online, do they have the resources, the bandwidth, the capacity to be able to be able to receive that information so they can consume it? And is their living environment even suitable to learning? How many families do you have together? So there is a multiplicity of issues that go far beyond technology that need to be taken in consideration as you really look at the human element and the ability that you want to provide growth and opportunities for a wide swath of people. But you also have to understand where is their starting point and what can you do to help them rise up and be able to provide the tools, technologies, and the capabilities so they can have that learning and really make it an advantage for them so that they can change the lives of not only themselves, but their families.
Yeah, those are really important points. And I think, you know, the challenges are always different, right? We know we talked a little bit earlier the other day about India. Electricity goes out and what do you then, right? It's very hard at that point. Dr. Farooq, I'd love to hear a little bit about your thoughts on really reaching those communities that probably have difficult accessing these new tools and adapting.
Well, I think the key is there's a lot of intersectionality when it comes to those communities. And so I'm a big proponent of like the community schools concept where the neighborhood schools, the public schools, K-12 are conduits for, you know, being a resource for healthcare, for social services to families and the broader community, not just purely the direct core function of educating our young people. And so through partnerships like that, through partnerships with the faith-based community, through, you know, a variety of different ways, you know, community-based organizations, there's different ways to have partnerships, again, to have that communication and input on where we can be of value and service given these different market dynamics that are facing. And also know where to strategically place those investments. At the end of the day, you have to meet people where they're at. And it's really more so particularly critical in these types of circumstances. And the sooner we do this, obviously, the compounding interest from a negative standpoint of damage that will be done later will be exacerbated. I know on environmental issues, on dealing with oil well capping and some of the fossil fuel industries too, there's been in Kern County and others, there's been some engagements and some strategic investments in those areas also. But in the tech space, you know, it's something that's not specific, you know, to regions like Silicon Valley. It's the need and the demand for the tech jobs are really, you know, they're potential opportunities and risks throughout the whole state.
Any final thoughts, Buzz?
I think the sort of the salient points from our conversation are really being able to reach out to local communities, find ways to be able to put together relationships there as you start looking at a broader scope for making technology available. The whole idea of creating a training program, breaking into bite-sized chunks of micro-credentials, and then taking that all the way to a place where someone can achieve a certification that they can then take to an employer and look for a job and present themselves that they have the understanding to be able to do that job is a way that we can get a lot more people to be able to rise up. And certainly there's a flavor that it's not just about creating the education program itself. It's also thinking about the communities where the people are at and meeting them where they're at today in order to be able to provide that learning, that capability, and those opportunities.
Well, again, thank you so much for inviting me, Arbaz. I really appreciate your leadership and the pleasure to connect with you, Buzz, and thank you for your leadership and everything you're doing. You know, my last thoughts are just that we really need to engage in the workforce system as much as we can. It has an infrastructure for employers, for the business community writ large, but other sectors as well, the nonprofit community, to really engage and find a way to get access to resources, get plugged into employment opportunities and placements. But the other thing too is that at the state policy level, it's really about being very intentional about job quality. I mentioned before the investments the state's doing, but there's a number of different aspects of this. I think too often We're just trying to focus on getting people a job in general. And if you're not upskilling and doing that workforce development component, it's just perpetuating poverty. And so we're also really trying to be mindful of, let's find where the quality jobs already exist, and let's build pathways from our workforce system to getting people who need those jobs into those possibilities, as opposed to, again, just purely just trying to connect people wherever they can. I think ultimately that's how we're really going to move the needle and transform communities. And then there's a number of things that governments can do to create greater demand for quality jobs, like community workforce agreements, and different for projects, you know, and public agencies, especially throughout the state. So all these things can make a difference. But the key is we all need to be connected and collaborative, and our 45 local boards throughout the state can be a conduit to that. So looking forward to staying connected with all of you and seeing how we can continue to work together.
Appreciate your time, Dr. Farooq. I know you're a busy person, and you know, you think about California's workforce, I think it's almost like it's the size of a country, right? I mean, we have one of the largest states in populations in the world. So I know you're busy, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for listening to the Certified Skills in AI and Tech podcast, brought to you by Criterion, where we provide platforms, software, and test development and delivery services for certification programs.